Thanks for tuning in to the 18th episode of the Handmade with Heart podcast. On this episode, I interview Devin from House of Blackwell. We chat about turning your videos into engaging stories, resources for getting a lawyer if you need to protect your small business, and the pros and cons of being an autistic creator. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Handmade with Heart podcast. I'm your host, Dana, and I own the small business Scrappy Stitch. Have you ever wanted to know more about some of your favorite small businesses? Follow along as I interview other creative small business owners. We'll talk about getting started, what an average day for a creator is like, tips and tricks, and of course, everything is Handmade with Heart. Hey, Devin, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. I'm so excited. Go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us how you got started.
Hi, I'm Devin Blackwell, and I make Halloween decor out of corn husks. I got started in Halloween 2020 when I decided that I wanted to make a more traditional corn husk witch, and I posted her on social media, and a lot of people were like, I want one. So, of course, I had to make everyone one, and then after that, it just kind of took off a little life of its own.
I think I read on your website that you used to do corn husks when you were little, too.
Yeah, so I grew up in Northeast Texas area, and my dad was living on like a farm slash ranch. And of course, you know, you get put to work on said farm slash ranch. So there was a lot of shucking corn, and you have all these corn husks left over. So we were just making random things out of it. The reason why I chose to do the corn husk witch was because I wanted to kind of rewrite my childhood in a more positive way, like do it my way.
I've never even heard of them before. I literally, like, I was scrolling through TikTok and your video came up and I was like, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. It was so cool. Oh,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's like, the little ears, everything. That's just so cute.
Thank you. Yeah. It's an old art form. Like,
yeah,
it got really popular in the 70s again. That's the cool thing about art and stuff like that, is that you can find other people that are in your field and become friends with them and stuff. I am friends with older cornhusk artists. I actually haven't found any artists that were like my age. They were all older than me because they were like doing the more traditional forms, and it was a dying art. Like, there wasn't any like new breath being breathed into it in a contemporary way, because cornhusk is such an awesome material. You can do so much with it. So to re-energize the interest in it, and maybe even get, like, you know, people looking into their heritages and like reconnecting that way, because I reinvigorated the interest, would be really cool.
So you say you specialize in home decor for the black sheep. That's like your tagline.
You know, this brings me to the funny story to why my last name is Blackwell. So Blackwell's not my real last name. It's very similar to my last name, but it's not. My real name is Bagwell. And I lived in a family where my mother actually married a man with last name Bridwell. So I feel like I was the black sheep of the family. And that's kind of how Blackwell came to be. And I didn't want to limit myself to any one medium. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to make everything, because I know that people like me are going to like it. So in reality, I'm creating for myself. I am the black sheep, but I know that I will attract my flock, if you will. Mm-hmm. I want to be the little merry little lamb to my little black sheep flock. So I do it for them now. I do it for me, but I do it for them.
I love it. Where do you get your inspiration from?
Okay. So it's going to get a little woo-woo from here on out.
Okay.
So you know how some people are like, I get downloads from spirit and, like, you know, the other realm and whatever. That's in lines with my inspiration. I have no idea where it comes from. It's either like dreams or like it pops into my head. It's kind of like a spiritual practice for me, if you will. Like, my art is just a spiritual practice for me. Sometimes I'd say it's pretty rare that my inspiration will come from like, oh, I'll see a tree and I'll see some lines in the tree and be like, oh, that reminds me of something. And then it leads from A to B to C. But I think a lot of it has to do with either subconscious tabs kind of running in the background, or maybe it's something otherworldly. I don't know.
You say on your website that as an artist, you don't like to be limited to any medium. Tell me a little bit about that.
So I think as artists, especially when we find our niche and we become successful in a niche, I think that we can get tied down to that niche and we can become stale in it. So I think that it's really imperative to take your skills to other mediums so you can learn skills there and take it back to your medium. So if you feel inspired to do something and you're like, oh, I can't do that because I don't have the time, you really need to make time to do those things so you can learn different skills and reapply it. A lot of the things that I do with my work is skills learned from other skill sets. I didn't always do cornhouse dolls, but I've been an artist my entire life. So before dolls, I was doing leather working, I was making armor, costumes, cosplay, etc. And I think a lot of those skills carried over to what I do right now.
How long after you started making the witches did it evolve into the bats and the spiders?
What happened was that, there's a very particular way to make witches that are traditional. We've been doing it in like the Appalachian area for a very long time, though I'm like a little further south from that. When you do the traditional witches, there's a way to go about it. And I guess because I'm autistic, it's really easy for me to see patterns and things and transfer them over. So that pattern detection allowed me to just kind of see how does the witch form and then just translate it to other silhouettes. And so it wasn't long, I think maybe only 6 months after I made the first cornhusk witch, I was like, oh, let's make a bat. 6 months later, it's like, oh, let's make a spider. 6 months later, it's revising both of those models to become better, more realistic looking. I have the first of everything hanging up by my door so I can see how things like weather, so to speak. I don't actually keep the best ones of my work, I just keep the firsts. So it was pretty easy to like evolve it. And I definitely am not stopping with new stuff anytime soon. In fact, like next week, I'm already making several new things of something. And then it just takes a few months for me to see, like, okay, is this lasting? Is this weathering? Is it torn easy? Testing it out. And then by then, it's like, okay, it's good. And then I'll start selling it.
I know. I saw
Yeah.
you started making a, is it a crow or a raven?
Crow slash raven, I guess it
Okay.
depends on like, I mean, it's so vague looking that I guess it could pass for either or. Yeah. So I started making the crows just recently. I am also making another one of those next week for a client. And I'm going to try and make at least one of those a month. Hopefully,
Okay.
I don't know. They're kind of hard.
They look really intricate.
Thank you. They are, man. It took me a very long time to make that one, but I've been hoping to make one for a while. So,
Do you have people say to you a lot like, oh, you should do this or you should make that?
yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, corn is an unforgiving mistress. So some things they want me to do, I'm not going to be able to do. The raven or slash crow, I thought was almost going to be impossible to do. I was like, there's no way I can do this. And I somehow did that. I've got a bunch of ideas like lined up. I have a hard time sitting down and doing things for myself versus like things
Yeah.
other people. Because I every day that I go to work and I'm like, I'm going to sit down and do something fun. I have like 10 people being like, when are the bats going to be out? When is this going to be out? When's that going to be out? And I'm like, okay, I guess it's going to be a restock week again.
Do you have a hard time like trying something new or trying to figure out your own pattern because you're worried it's like not going to work? Do you have a hard time with that?
Nah,
Oh, really?
you have to get so comfortable with
I do.
failing. Yeah, you have to be humble and be like, I am a piece of shit. I'm not good at anything, and then go straight for it. Because actually, like, I started making things when I was a kid because we were too poor to actually afford anything. So I started making things really young because I'd be like, oh, I want clothes for my doll. Well, gotta make them. I want this costume for ha actually, that's really how it started, was I want this costume for Halloween. It's kind of funny now that I think about it because I was a bat for Halloween and would actually literally hang upside down on my bed. So ever since then, I've been very comfortable with the process of like creating something, and you need to give yourself plenty of time to like fuck it up and redo it many times over to get to the point where you want to be. And the better you get at that process, the faster you'll actually be able to complete the process. Doesn't matter what type of art you're doing.
Yeah.
Because you'll just mentally be like, oh, okay, go. Oh, okay, all right, next. So just get comfortable with the process. And that applies to any art, not even just creative stuff like martial arts, World of Warcraft, apparently. Stuff like that. It'll any learning project it'll apply to. It's great.
I have found like when I do sit down and do something and I think, oh, it's going to be awful, it usually does just end up working out anyway. So
Yeah.
I guess you just need to trust yourself, you
Yeah, absolutely. I
know?
mean, and even when it looks shitty, just be okay with it because it's like, does it do what it was supposed to do? Yeah. I mean, maybe your taste is just better than your skill set at that point, and that's fine.
And do you dye all the corn husks yourself?
Yes, and that is one of my most popularly asked questions is how do you dye it and do you dye it? So the process is so varied. It's not simple. And that's actually one of the things that annoys me is when people look at my art, like the hate comments or whatever, is they'll look at it and be like, that's so easy. That's so simple. That's so whatever. And I'm like, yo, you have no idea how many hours I've spent in the kitchen, like a witch on her cauldron, just with the dye batches, because each one of them is different. Even when you buy your dye from the same source, it is going to change formulas in 6 months. It's going to change formulas in 2 weeks. It could be stored in a weird way and it's going to change on you. So you have to custom, or I have to custom make every single batch of dye several different ways. I have to look at the corn and be like, what kind of dye is this going to need? This dye isn't going to penetrate it all the way. I need this kind of dye. What kind of animal am I making? That kind of dye isn't going to work. It's going to change the texture of the corn, blah, blah, blah. It's a lot of work, but I do dye it. I think 3 weeks out of the month I'm making dolls, and then 1 week is usually just dyeing and cleaning corn. So it's a
Very
lot.
cool. Yeah. So I found you on TikTok where you had several videos go super viral, and you've gone viral on Instagram too. So were you surprised at the amount of attention that you've received from those videos?
It may be conceited, but no. Yeah, the moment that recent one, the moment I pressed send, I was like looking over at my significant other and be like, yeah, that one went viral. You can feel it sometimes. The thing about virality is that a lot of people are trying to obtain it. And I feel like it's really at the mercy of whatever platform you're putting it on, and also telling a story. One of the things that I've spent a really large part of my life doing, this also applies to the whole participating in other mediums thing, is that for 10 years I've been a writer as well. Have I published anything? No. Absolutely not. In fact, I don't even know if any of my writing is really that good. But what it has taught me to do is to make a story in social media posts and how to write a short story that will keep people engaged. So it's like you can sell people a dream, an idea, a lifestyle based on your storytelling. And that's what social media is. If you can get what you have, like your golden nugget out in front of your audience within the first few seconds, that video will reach so many more people. Ask them an inquisitive question or put your golden nugget out there first. Don't wait 30 seconds to show your final product. Put your final product out there first. Ask them an engaging question. Have them sit there and read it and then show your product, et cetera, et cetera. You need to engage the audience. Tell a short story, and usually you'll see your videos reach more people.
That's a great strategy.
Yeah, I mean, because at the end of the day, your art is not limited to what you make. Your art needs to be, what is the vibe that people get when they come into your booth, when they come into your website? How do they feel when they receive your package? I could go on.
We were talking about YouTube videos and TikTok videos and people's attention spans. TikTok, it seems like everyone has a short attention span. They want really fast videos, really fast tutorials. And YouTube, they're looking for long, drawn out. You really have to change your style depending on the social media platform that you're on.
That ties back into the storytelling aspect. So short stories are longer stories without all the stuff in between it. So you still want your beginning, middle, and end. But yeah, I think for TikTok, for instance, I don't think that everybody on this planet has ADHD. I just think that maybe certain people drift towards certain platforms, right? And I love YouTube and I love TikTok. TikTok is great for like waking up in the mornings. YouTube is great for when I'm working. So you still need to tell a story with each, but it'll be different. So content like, for instance, my drinking horn tutorial, I put that on YouTube and I tried to put it on TikTok and it didn't really do well at all. On YouTube, it didn't do well either. But I think on YouTube, it like the actual story itself did a lot better on YouTube and will eventually, like once I grow my YouTube channel, it'll be there. It'll do fine. Realistically, just like nobody wins by YouTube because I don't have that many subscribers on it, right? But that was a better format for YouTube. Whereas like on TikTok, I guess you would want more like lesser detailed, shorter things. I guess like blips, like advertisements. YouTube's like lengthy storytelling. Yeah, they're great for both.
What do you use to edit your videos?
On TikTok, I just use regular TikTok editor. For YouTube, I use DaVinci Resolve, which, be warned, it's a huge program.
Is that?
Like file size wise, it
I
will
never heard of
wreck
that
your
one. I'll have
computer. It will wreck your computer. It has made me so frustrated. But yeah, DaVinci is really good.
I use Sony Vegas for my YouTube videos, and
Really?
I really like it. A friend of mine showed me how to use that years ago, and then I just always stuck with it.
I mean, stick to what you know.
Yep. And TikTok, the TikTok editor has come a long way, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It was so
It's
basic.
pretty good.
Yeah, it is really good. Now that you can like move clips around and add clips after the fact, because you used to not even be able to do that. It was horrible.
No, yeah, it's a great editor. In fact, I wish that there was an editor similar to TikTok, just like not DaVinci, because DaVinci is literally so complicated. It looks like you're just like a wizard looking at runestones. But it's the only one I know how to use.
Yeah.
So I have to use it.
My Sony Vegas is from like probably 8 years ago. Every time I open it now, they're like, you can upgrade to the next version. No. I'm like, no, it's still working fine.
I don't like change.
I know. That's what I worry about, is that I'm going to upgrade and then this is going to be up here now. And, you know, I can't do that. Now, you said some of the bad things about social media is the hate comments and learning how to deal with those since going viral. Tell me a little bit about that.
So the other side of virality is that sometimes when you know, a lot of artists think, if I go viral, that's it. I just need one video. And I would like to say that I would actually prefer to have smaller videos go semi-viral than have one video reach everybody. And that's because you're going to find people that are not in your demographic and they can be mean. If you've never gone viral before and then you go viral, it is a little bit of a mental adjustment to those things. And I didn't find any resources for artists going through mental problems or mental health issues by getting all that criticism at once that we are just not used to in our daily lives. So what I did when that video went viral was the first thing I had to do was to mentally process and rely on my support system. So like therapy, journaling, significant other to help me, because it really hit me hard. But then after I got back up and was like, okay, now it's time to like actually like move on, I did realize that the hate comments I received was actually, first of all, not that many compared to the amount of that saw the video. Two, not unique to my video. You know, I've seen hate comments towards like the most innocent accounts. Like it could be an account of a kitten and you're going to see hate comments.
Oh yeah.
And you have to understand that there are like some really horrible people out there that just like have to let it out somewhere. And it's not personally on you.
Right. It's so funny you say that about like the kitten, because yeah. I was literally watching a video the other day and it was some lady introducing a kitten to her dog. And this one lady was like, I hate when people mix cats and dogs. And it's like, what? Like, what in the world?
God
it's
forbid,
a cute
I want
video
to have
and
more
they,
than one
they, like,
pet.
Love each other. Right.
I mean, there was this one account that had a goat and people are saying the worst things about this goat. And I'm like, bro, it's the cutest goat I've ever seen. How could you? And that's when it shifted into perspective. If a shitty person is going to say something bad about an adorable goat, then of course someone can say some awful shit about an adorable spider and bat that did right. nothing wrong.
Right. Right.
I think one thing that this also ties into the virality thing is that a lot of people think that once you go viral, like you've made it. And in reality, I think a lot of people don't realize how much artists have to do and how much support they have to have. I'm not gonna lie. Some artists are like, they're like doing great. They got like their life together. They're like, yeah, this is my business. I do awesome. But I think a lot of artists fall into the category of like me, for instance. I'm gonna use me as an example. I have a living situation that allows me to make or not make as much money as I need to focus on my business, where a lot of other people don't get that luxury. And so people will see what I post on social media and be like, oh, she's made it. So like that can imply a lot of things. Like some people can steal your designs and be like, it won't affect her. My significant other always assumes that someone on TV would make a lot of money. And then when the strike happened and he realized a lot of them were making nothing, it's like, that's how it is to be an artist as well. You do not know anybody's financial situation. If you're a small artist, do not hate yourself for having to do what you got to do to keep going. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of us either have luxuries, and a lot of rich people, yeah, they get to shoot the arrow at the target as many times as they need to stick. At the end of the day, it just is, how many arrows do you get? A lot of poor people don't get a lot of arrows. They're busy doing their jobs. They have kids. They got responsibilities, mm-hmm. you know?
I know. That's very true, because going viral doesn't equate like uber success of anything. Mm-hmm. Just because people enjoy watching your videos doesn't mean they're going to buy your stuff.
No, I actually didn't even make that many sales from
Really?
that. Yeah, really. I think all of my sales came from people who stick around on my Instagram and just like wait for me to release things. You know, some people find me on TikTok and they buy, but like I didn't sell out of anything like from that video. I just sell out like period because I have like a good customer base that was before that.
You're on Etsy too, right?
You know, that's a good point because kind of yes and no. I was on Etsy. That used to be my sole platform was on Etsy. Now I have my Shopify, which is thehouseofblackwell.com. And I do all my new releases on Shopify. And if something doesn't sell within a week or two, I will move it to Etsy. And Etsy is more of like a advertising hub. So when someone purchases off my Etsy, I'll send them a coupon code to go use on my Shopify to get them to check it out.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, which I think is a little gray for like the TOS for Etsy, but Etsy's not going to really be able to know what you're putting in your packages unless the customer says something, which usually they don't because it's a coupon.
Right.
So,
Right. I saw you posted an article that was published about you entitled Cute Decor with Corn Husks. And somebody wrote this about you, but never interviewed you and never asked for consent to write the article. Tell me about that.
I mean, like I knew hack journalism existed, but I didn't think I was going to encounter it so early on. Isabel Rivera wrote an article insinuating that I had given her some sort of deep knowledge about how to create my cornhusk bats. The tutorial is half-assed, for lack of a better word. It's super vague. I mean, it doesn't explain to you how to make really anything. She's like, roll this thing up, spray paint it, and glue it. And then something, something. And the worst part is, I've actually had customers come up to me and say, I tried this and it didn't work out too well. And they were brokenhearted about it. And I'm like, I don't use spray paint or glue in making any of my stuff. And here's the worst part is that, like, I really wish all artists did this, like, on a every couple week basis. I go in and I search all my hashtags, I search cornhusk bat, cornhusk spider, checking to make sure that if anybody is trying to come up with my designs, that like I know I'm clocking them, I know writing shit down, seeing what's happening, what's being talked about in my realm. So one of the things that people are talking about with the cornhusk bats is people are asking for a tutorial. And I'm seeing people post this link thinking that I endorse this tutorial. And I have to come in and say, hey, I'm the creator and I do not endorse this tutorial. It will lead to failure. And the unfortunate part when I say hate comments, the unfortunate part about it is that I've actually had people comment on my videos saying that I am over exaggerating how difficult these are to make, that they followed the tutorial and it was fine. The tutorial doesn't tell you how to make like feet, tails, nothing. It's just like roll it into a doobie and spray paint it. I'm like, yeah, okay. I don't think it looks like these, but I mean, sure. I mean, if you want to try it out, feel free, you know, but just wait for mine. Like, I don't understand.
Right. You should make a video doing the tutorial, the unendorsed tutorial, and
The
showing people
unendorsed
how
tutorial.
it, yeah,
Yeah.
showing people how it turns out. And like, this
You
is
know what?
work
That's a
for
great idea.
do it. So have you had people try to copy your work and sell it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know what? I don't want to get too dark about it, but it's like when you're autistic and you go through life as an undiagnosed autistic, there's a level of trauma that comes with that. Being ostracized a lot. So like as a kid, I was ostracized, but people stole my work back then too. Like I was of no use to them, but my artwork was. So as an adult, that really triggered me when I saw that happen for the first time. I was like, how could my ideas be worth something, but I'm not worth something? And it was a lot to get through. And so there's like a mental hurdle to jump over when your first art theft happens. But once you do mentally kind of get yourself together after that, you can look at it a few different ways. So one of the ways you can look at it is like, okay, this person was flattered by my hard work. And so they decided to copy. Another person is like, oh, they're writing off the coattails, whatever. But the way that I see it is there are a lot of artists that get paid more for people copying their work than they do making it. The only advice, which this is not legal advice, it's not legal advice. When I was copied for the first time, I knew my stuff was going to start gaining traction from then on out, and I had to protect my work. So I went down the bunny hole, if you will, about like, what is copyright? What is that? What's licensure? What is anything? And now I know a lot of artists can't afford to copyright all of their work because we make a lot of stuff. But if you have a completely unique idea and you see it gaining traction, it is best to look into getting it registered with Copyright Office, because if you don't have that registration, you cannot go sue someone for taking your design. And you can go sue them after the fact. Like, you can, once they steal the design, you can still go register it and sue them after the fact. But you lose out on a lot of damages, potential damages, especially, like, let's say it's a big corporation, you lose out on a lot of damages because you did not pre-register it. So the moment it starts gaining traction, register it. And also, if you end up being a career artist, it will be wise to register your works before you even publish them for sale, because it's cheaper and you can do them in batches. So I highly suggest people go do that, because you can go make a second income by suing people for stealing.
That is smart. That's a really great idea.
One thing I wanted to add to that is that there are artist resources available for people who cannot afford lawyers. So CalLawyersForTheArts.org is mine, because I live here in California. So that's mine. And you can go there and they will place you with a lawyer. And depending on your financial situations, they can place you with someone who is of lower cost or pro bono. Wow. Especially if you have a case that is good and they know that they're going to be able to sink their teeth into it. They will do it for you. Yeah.
Have you had to sue anyone yet?
I'm in the process.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm in contact with lawyers and we're just keeping an eye on the situation. But I have a feeling that even if this one doesn't pan out, having a lawyer on retainer when your stuff is going viral and you know people are going to take it and it's a unique idea is worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Worth it.
That's smart. Go get them, Devin.
Yeah.
Now, you're very open about being an autistic creator. So how has that helped you in your small business? And are there any ways that it's held you back?
The way that it's held me back is that I'm not very good with person-to-person interaction usually. It's like one-on-ones like this, especially with like other creatives or neurodivergent people, is totally fine. Or over the internet, it's been great, especially with the internet business. I feel like autistic people, people with ADHD, et cetera, can wear a lot of hats. And so small business is really good for them. They can like engage a lot of parts of their brain that are otherwise not utilized if when you're under another employer. Like, another employer is not going to give you the hope and grace that you're going to give yourself. Like, you can like vouch for yourself and be like, yeah, I can do that. And an employer is not going to put money on you usually. So I think the small business is great for that. I know that there's like a lot of people that want me to do like makers markets and stuff. I don't do makers markets, and it's because of the tism. I don't do the makers markets. That masking all day long, plus like getting up super early, you're sleep deprived, you're food deprived, you're water deprived, you're working a lot. I have to pee. These clothes are itchy. The lights are bright. I can't do this. I would have a meltdown like every time. And that was with help too. Like, I was getting help. And I know that it's really exciting for people to see my work in person, which is why I wholesale. So people get the opportunity, but I don't do makers markets for the mental health reasons. I think that's the biggest way that the TISMs hold me back. But the benefits have been pretty huge. I think in this realm of my life, the TISM excels. So all of the ideas, the way that I can transfer patterns from one medium to another, the way that like when you're super into an art form, you just immediately just dive in and you're like, oh, I can learn that in a few days. It's cool. Stuff like that. But when I'm down, I'm down. You know?
Yeah. You were diagnosed as an adult with autism?
Yeah. So just a couple of years ago, I was diagnosed with autism and ADHD.
Okay.
And it really like, I guess, like put things together for me. Before that, I was like, what's wrong with me? After that, I was like, oh, I know how to excel everything about me now. I just know what I need now.
Great.
And so now I'm unstoppable.
Okay, I love it.
No, that's not true. I am stoppable. I'm very stoppable, actually.
Do you do a lot of custom orders?
Yeah, actually I do. I don't advertise my custom orders, but if like, let's say someone messages me and they're like, hey, like, when are you going to have spiders back in stock? And I'm literally working on one as I'm talking to them. I'll be like, hey, do you want this one? They'll be like, yeah. I'm like, do you want anything in particular? You want a special chain? You want me to paint it? You want whatever? They're like, no, that's fine. Just go ahead and make whatever you can make. I'm like, okay, cool. Other times someone specifically asks me, like, I have a specific idea. Can you do this for me? Even though I don't advertise. And the reason why I don't advertise it is because like, I feel like if I did, all I would ever do would be custom orders. And that like sucks my soul out. I can do maybe like 1 week out of the month will be just full. Like this week, for instance, is only custom orders.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So hit me up if a customer wants something fun. Like, hit me up. I'll help you out.
Are you in any brick and mortar shops?
I get plenty of wholesale orders. So if you see a doll that looks like mine, it probably is. I don't even put tags on it or nothing. So if you see it that looks like mine, it probably is. In fact, I think there are some people that are even selling them online and they'll say like, oh, it's House of Blackwell, etc. So you can just go and buy them from there. They'll have colors that like I won't even have in stock because I made it for them and I don't have time to put more in my shop. So you can go find out of stock colors and stuff sometimes.
So do you do that all on your website or do you do wholesale like through fair or anything like that? Or is that...
People will usually be asking like on Facebook groups and stuff and I'll just pop in sometimes and be like, you know what, I'm free. Do you want this? And they'll be like, yeah, actually. And then I'll get maybe two or three orders at a time. So I just kind of go in and like manually procure my wholesale orders. Sometimes people message me through my website about it. You can get in contact with me anywhere if you want to do it. And I'll try to squeeze in and make room for you. I did try to do fair. I just never got around to setting it up because they're kind of specific with the photos and stuff.
Hmm.
So that's where it stopped for me. I got into fair rather easily, but it stopped when like they were like, oh, but by the way, we need these specific photos, these specific things, these specific setups. And I just never got that far. I was like, no, you know what people on Facebook take? They take my shitty phone photos and they like them.
Did you sign up for the TikTok shop?
Not yet. I don't know if I will, but I've seen some people reach like mad levels of success that way. Mm-hmm. There's this one guy, I don't remember his username, sorry, that did like a sewing manual. And it was just like a, I guess what they would call a zine. And it's not even like a sewing manual, like he's showing you how to make anything. It's just like showing you like sewing vocabulary, like little things like that for you to go really research on. A jumping off point, if you will. He sold 3,000 copies in like a couple of weeks and he's selling them for like $15 each. And I was like, that's looking pretty tasty.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. If you have a product that's like easily made, like he's just printing it out, he's cranking them out and it's really easy. So if you have something readily made, like he's just printing it out, or if you have something that you just had manufactured, I think TikTok Shop is great. If you're hand making things, it can be difficult because they have a 3-day turnaround time and the demand like that guy saw could be crazy.
Yeah.
So you have to, because TikTok will push your videos out for you. So if you're already seeing success and you decide to do TikTok shop, maybe only do your manufactured or easily made things like printing out and et cetera. If I end up doing paper tutorials and things like that, that's probably the route I will try. We'll see if it'll be successful, but I think that it's a great tool if you use it right.
What do you like most about owning a small business?
I like that I actually can see growth with a small business, whereas like, I mean, I've worked other jobs. And I feel like as an autistic person, since the unemployment rate is so high for autistic people, I think it's because of the like things that we have a hard time navigating. So like, for instance, a lot of autistic people have certain efficient ways of doing things that go against the status quo of like a regular company and they don't want you to do it that way. They'll see you as doing it incorrectly, even though like your way is better. Mm-hmm. Or you'll be talking to customers and then customers will be like, there's something off. There's something weird with that one. We don't like them. Or they'll like complain about you for doing literally nothing, but maybe having like a resting bitch face. Yeah, I would last maybe a year tops at certain jobs just because like social hierarchies, I couldn't navigate. I couldn't climb. There was just nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. I have potential, I feel. So with small businesses, I feel like you can like use that potential. If you have an amazing mind, go use your mind for yourself. Go better yourself in some way. It doesn't even have to be a small business. Like go, like if you want to better a community, I literally play World of Warcraft in my off time. And the amount of things people will do on a game they pay for free, because they simply want to be a part of a community and like use their brain for good, you know, like go do that. Mm-hmm. And that's the best part of having a small business, being able to use your brain in all the different ways for yourself. It's great.
So a lot of people in your comments keep asking for a tutorial. Do you think you'll make one?
You know, I have already actually made one. And it's not the Isabel Rivera one. Okay. It's not that one. I actually have. I hand illustrated it myself. It's completely ready to go. But I have decided to wait on releasing it. And that may be a bad decision. It may be a good one. We'll have to see. But You know, Halloween is right around the corner, and people want that tutorial so badly. But I also think that there's a culture on TikTok where a lot of people will kind of pressure artists into trying to give away information for free. And that I think that's one of the hate comments I did get was like a lot, well, hate comments or criticism, I guess you could say, is that a lot of people are annoyed that I was going to charge for my tutorial. They're like, where's my free tutorial? And I was like, you don't get a free tutorial. Sorry, like if I'm going to replace, which the bats are a huge portion of my business, if I'm going to replace selling them with selling you information, I'm going to have to charge. You know, if you want this milkshake, I'm going to have to charge. So that leads me to discuss like this fun fact that I learned because we were discussing like the lawyer thing and like all this legal stuff. Yeah, fun fact is when you release a tutorial on an item, you no longer own the copyright to that item.
Really?
Really? So someone could do anything they want with that item that you made a tutorial for. So by me making a tutorial for the bats, I am releasing all legal protection over that piece. I no longer
Wow.
own it. I own the tutorial. I don't own the bat anymore. Yeah.
That is wild.
So if you give out a tutorial on TikTok because you see the numbers going up, you're seeing your virality, you're essentially handing over your intellectual property for free, even though you're gaining followers. And for what? TikTok might get banned. So for what? What are you doing it for? Like, let's say someone's asking for a tutorial of like a knot, you know, that's basic information. Do that. Give them information on a knot. Or if I was going to give a tutorial on how to clean corn husks, that's not an issue at all. But the moment that I see people using my intellectual property to make money that is threatening the food from my mouth, then it becomes an issue of how much more money can I make? Is the tutorial going to project me into the financial future I want, or is protecting the copyright going to do that? So you have to make the decision for yourself. I would actually really like to take my business in like that direction, classes, tutorials, etc. Because at the end of the day, I can only make so many of things for people and my ideas are coming from me, but like I can only make so many per day. And honestly, I don't like to make the same thing over and over and over and over a lot. I think a lot of people can relate to that. So in the future, if I can get enough people that want classes and tutorials, like if I can just group up enough, like I can start doing that earlier. But for now, I just don't have enough people to warrant putting more energy into that at the moment. It's like courthouse business comes first. Tutorials come second. I already have some like tutorials on my website, and I think one of them is even free. And it's for Renaissance fairs. If you're a Viking or a Renaissance fair goer, you really want to check that out. It's for a drinking horn. Yeah, so if people want to make a drinking horn, go to my website. It's free. So I like doing tutorials and classes. It would be really cool at the moment, like seeing just at the moment, like when the right time to pivot it will be. But that is the plan. We'll see how it goes, but that's the plan. At some point, I would like to get my business to a point where all of my ideas are going to be sold in tutorial form and I don't need to rely on any of them anymore. Because I'm just one person and I want my art to live on. And, you know, the cornhusk artistry is an ancient art form. I don't want to keep or gatekeep any of my techniques that come with me to the grave. I don't want to do that. So eventually, I do want them to go back out, and eventually they will. But for now, I need to make sure that my future is secure and I don't accidentally become a one-hit wonder.
There's so much to copyright law. Unfortunately, a lot of people learn the hard way, I feel like,
Oh yeah, that's why those resources are really important to go to that artist lawyer thing. You know, it costs a lot of money still to even get a reduced fee lawyer, but the information they could give you is valuable. And you could really learn how to protect your art that way. There's so many people that came for me and they were like, I'm gonna make a tutorial on your bats. I'm gonna make a tutorial on your bats and because you won't make one and blah, blah, blah. But none of those people actually ended up doing anything. But the problem is that small businesses don't have enough money to actively pursue people a lot of the times. That sucks. That absolutely sucks.
Do you have any goals for the rest of the year?
Honestly, I could never see more than like 2 or 3 weeks in advance. You know what? I guess that's not true. I'd like to hit record sales in October because I think I can do it. But we'll see about that. I don't know. Maybe my record sales, I already missed that window because, you know, people buy for September for like October decorations, you know.
I know, I have a hard time planning ahead like that. Like, I should be working on Christmas stuff already, but I'm still like doing, like, you know what I mean, to get it ready so yeah. that I have it, but I'm still working on Halloween stuff.
Yeah, it's hard. I stopped fighting it. And I think that's like one of the biggest pet peeves some people have. You know, those like people that are coaches and they're like, I'm a marketing coach and this is what I think you should do to like go viral and like whatever. They hate me because I'll roll up and be like, oh no, I'm an intuitive poster. They're like, what is that? And I'm like, I post whenever the fuck I want to. It's too hard to post like 3 times a day.
Yeah.
It's too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like stop pretending it's not hard. It is.
I literally have that on my YouTube channel. New videos whenever I feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's too hard to stick to a schedule. I mean,
especially when you're doing other stuff.
Right.
You're not getting, you know, like it's not like a lot of these people get paid to do what they do. We just have to show up for free like 3 times a day. That's ridiculous.
Right.
No.
Well, we're getting near the end of the show. And that means random fact time. Do you have your random fact for me?
Yes. Did you know that corn was not always what it was? It took 9,000 years of cultivating by the indigenous people of Mexico to get a wild grass to the corn that we know today.
Wow. I did not know that.
That's crazy, right? So everyone's like, is the corn GMO'd? It is. 9,000 years of genetically modifying it to get it to where it is. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
Humans are great.
I love it. Do people ever say anything weird like corny jokes or anything like that?
Absolutely. I do. I call myself a corn star. Whenever anybody is like, what do you do for work? I'm like, oh, I do corn. I Halloween decorn.
Yeah.
I'm bad with it.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Well, it was so great having you on the podcast, Devin. Thanks so much for taking time out and hanging out with me this afternoon.
Thank you for having me. It was a blast.
I can't wait to see what you come up with next.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Handmade with Heart podcast. Don't forget to follow Devin at House of Blackwell, and you can find me at Scrappy Stitch and the Handmade with Heart podcast.